May it please the Court, my name is Alan Herson. I represent Mr. Lombardo. This case was dismissed by the District Court for failure to state a cause of action. The amended complaint sets forth a challenge to Oregon's regulation of residential signs. The complaint alleges that Mr. Lombardo wants to display a sign that's 8 feet by 4 feet or 32 square feet. A sign of that size with commercial on-site speech is perfectly permissible. But for the expression of ideas is a prior restraint. Mr. Lombardo is required to apply and receive from the state either a permit or a variance.
Well, I thought he could put anything he wanted on that sign. And the only objection is the size.
Yes.
He could put commercial, non-commercial, religious, political, anything he wants to say on that sign.
But not the 8 foot by 4 foot sign, the one that he wants to have.
Whatever the size of the sign is, he can put up anything he wants to put up on it.
No, I disagree. A 4 foot by 3 foot sign, or 12 square feet, can put anything he wants. A size sign.
What message can he not display on the sign that he wants to put up?
Expression of ideas. Elect Jane Doe, for example. Keep abortion legal. End abortion today. Those things are he cannot put up without permission from the state.
He never, Mr. Lombardo never applied for a variance, right?
Yes.
You think he has standing to challenge this, at least the variance procedures, without having applied for one?
Well, surely he has a standing to make a facial challenge.
Well, there are two different challenges. Now, one is, you know, what you call, I guess, to the substance of the law, you know, which is that it's content-based. And the second is to the procedural challenge to the variance, right? Those are two different challenges, and I think they require two different kinds of standing, don't they?
I disagree. Well, I would think that a facial challenge can be made to either of those types of regulation on the grounds that for good cause shown is not defined. A facial challenge can be made as to that. He doesn't have to apply for it at all. I think that's true for both types of situations that you stated.
Now, why do you say this? Why do you say this statute is content-based?
Well,
where do you find that? Give us the precise provision you're depending on.
The exact section.
Well, or the language, yeah.
Language. Well, the Oregon Motorist Information Act is rather complicated, and in it, it states that certain speech requires a permit or a variance.
But is that based on content?
Yes.
The requirement?
Yes, because on-site speech is exempted. On-site commercial speech is exempted.
Well, not just commercial speech. Any kind of
right.
On-site speech.
Any kind of on-site speech is exempted. But expression of ideas is never exempted because it can never be on-site.
Well, he's in the residential area.
Yes.
So there's no on-site business to advertise.
Well, he does have a business.
So he can put up a sign that says "Peace in the Gulf."
No, he can't because that's expression of ideas. Only thing that's allowed without a prior restraint is on-site commercial speech.
No, not commercial, just on-site.
On-site speech, correct. But any type of non-commercial speech.
So why is that content-based? It seems like it's location-based.
It is content-based because the statute or the act targets the expression of ideas.
How so? It targets whether it's on-site or off-site. How is that a targeting of an idea? For instance, if you have a church or a temple or synagogue, you say, you know, come and pray with us on Sunday. Is that permissible for a church to put that kind of sign up?
Yes, but these are residents.
Well, isn't that content-based, and isn't that the expression of an idea?
But we're talking about residents. A resident can never have expression of idea under the Oregon system, because
what can a resident have?
Only thing a resident can have if he's selling, for example, apples.
Well, suppose he's having a prayer meeting on Wednesday. Prayer meeting Wednesday night. Can he do that? On his premises?
Yes, he could say that.
Then what's the difference between apples on sale on Tuesday and a prayer meeting on Wednesday?
Oh, but you look at content. If he reads a sign that says keep abortion legal, that's not permitted.
No, but neither is, you know, buy apples at my farm 20 miles out of town.
That's true.
Well, how is it content? I don't understand how it's content based.
Because we have to look at the sign, we have to read the message, and it particularly targets expression of ideas. It's very difficult, almost impossible, to say for a resident to put up a sign that says elect Jane Doe, for example, because elect Jane Doe.
Well, let's talk about the sign that you want. The sign that you want is peace in the Gulf. Now you tell me that you can't. The statute prohibits that on your property?
Yes. So the size that he wants.
Okay, now, what section says that?
Well,
it wouldn't prohibit it if Mr. Lombardo were the president of the Gulf Veterans Association for Peace?
He would have to have, I believe, in his house, and the state would have to believe him, it would have to be the headquarters.
Right.
But very few people have at their house headquarters for things.
Well, very few people sell apples, too, from their house.
Well, some people do. Now, Mr. Lombardo happens to sell dogs at his house. He sells wolves and German shepherds at his house. He has some acreage.
But he could have his house as the headquarters of, you know, Gulf Veteran for Peace, right?
And that's correct.
And if he did, he could advertise, you know, Gulf Veterans for Peace in the Gulf or something.
Presumably, yes.
It's because it's connected with his business, his nonprofit enterprise.
That's right. However, in City of Ladue versus Galeo, the Supreme Court recognized an absolute right for residents to display speech, and that's not. That's not affected by on-site or off-site speech. A resident has a right because of the location, precisely because of the location of the sign. It's very important, the Supreme Court said, that the resident has a right to say keep abortion legal, regardless of whether or not he's in some type of association. And that is abridged by this statute, particularly the variance, which allows only 60 days. If he received the variance, he can only display the sign for 60 days. There's no recognition in the City of Ladue of any time limitation. And if we're talking about elections, 60 days are not enough. Right now we've got a presidential election a year and a half away, and already the politicians are going for office and campaigning. So a sign needs to be up more than 60 days. And that right is a bridge. That right recognized in the City of Ladue is a bridge by this act.
This on-site, off-site designation has been found constitutional in other circuits. Is that not correct?
I don't believe so. I think the First Circuit did not find it constitutional. I don't think any other circuit has looked at that specifically, the on-site, off-site. Maybe Rapa was one, but that was before. Rapa was before the City of Ladue, and I think Rapa was the City of Ladue and City of Ladue. In Rapa, they said they didn't have to follow Metro Media, and City of Ladue adopted Metro Media, I believe, and said that the Metro Media plurality opinion was the appropriate opinion to follow. Getting back to the on-site, off-site, in Metro Media, the court at page 513 said the following. The fact that a city may value commercial messages relating to on-site goods and services does not justify prohibiting an occupant from displaying its own ideas of those of others. And that is what we have in Oregon. You go back to the on-site, off-site, where the city values commercial messages. Mr. Lombardo can say German shepherds for sale, but he may not say, without permission from the state, for peace in the Gulf. this is not a time, place, or manner. It is content-based because we have to, there's different treatment of the commercial speech and the expression of ideas. Also, it is not a time, place, or matter. The word place is important because in City of Ladue, the Supreme Court said the place of the sign is important because the identity of the speaker at a residence is very important in expressing ideas. Who is saying it? The fact that it's Mr. Lombardo is very important as opposed to a Mr. Smith or something. It has intrinsic meaning. Also, in the variance, a variance is permissible only upon good cause shown, and good cause shown is not defined by Oregon.
Every family law judge in the United States issues at least once a day an order to show cause, and there's nothing that says what the show cause constitutes.
Well, in Desert Outdoor versus City of Moreno Valley,
an order to show cause when a husband should not be required to leave the house at this afternoon. Order to show cause why custody should not be granted to the mother. Order to show cause why the husband should not pay $50 a month more in alimony.
Well, this is for good cause shown. It's a little bit different. For good cause, you have to show the court, or show the government when you request a variance, that you've got good cause for it. That's not defined anywhere.
Isn't that more specific than cause? The case that Judge Ferguson referring to, it just says, you know, defendant shall show cause. And here you have to show good cause. Doesn't that make it more specific instead of more ambiguous?
That's more ambiguous because no one knows what good cause means.
Well, does everybody know what cause means?
No, nobody knows what cause is.
Well, that's his point. Judge Ferguson's point that every day judges issue hundreds of orders telling parties in cases to show cause. Or they may even say to show good cause. Are all those orders invalid because they're ambiguous?
No, because judges at times have the discretion.
No, they're directed to the parties, though.
Right, and that they have to prove it to the court, and the court has discretion. We're talking about a state employee here.
Well, why should a judge have discretion to issue an order to show cause?
Well, in a family law setting, he has to weigh the facts and determine who is showing good cause. Or a cause. Here, it's a little bit different. We have a state employee saying to Mr. Lombardo, who wants to put up a sign, thinking, well, maybe I'll put your sign up or not. Mr. Jones, I like you better than Mr. Lombardo, so I'm going to accept Mr. Jones's and not Mr. Lombardo's. First Amendment does not permit regulation of signs on an ad hoc basis. And that's what happens when we have for good cause shown.
Now, in this statute, it says that you can't deny it based on content. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
And it gives a couple of examples of what would be a good cause for granting it.
Right, but it also says that it's not the only reasons. So it allows leeway to the state employee to do whatever he or she wants. Again, it allows unfettered discretion. Favored speakers can be allowed to speak. Unfavored people, regardless of the content. There are unfavored people in Oregon, as there are in every state. An unfavored person who the particularly employee of the state doesn't like, they can say, well, you know, I'm just not going to approve yours. You didn't show me good cause. And we saw it's the mere possibility of exercising this discretion.
Have you tried to find out from the state how many variances have been issued under the OMIA, you know, what the grounds were, what the circumstances were, anything like that, how many have been denied and so forth?
Well, no, but if this case gets remanded, perhaps that would be something we could do in discovery. This case was dismissed for failure to state a cause of action, so we never really reached discovery. The mere possibility of exercising unfettered discretion is the violation of the First Amendment. And this court stated it in three cases, NAACP versus Western Region versus City of Richmond, U.S. v. Linick, and Young versus City of Simi Valley. And that's the problem we have in Oregon. It's the possibility of exercising this discretion to allow some people to speak but not others.
Well, but aren't those cases that involve sort of regulation of content?
It's a possibility that content, and it's the possibility in this case, too, that content could be secretly behind a person's denial of a variance. Because
I thought Judge Fletcher just referred to the statute that said it can't be based on content.
Well, it could be based upon who the person is who is applying for the content. Doesn't necessarily have to be content-based. The person who works for the state can certainly have a disfavored person, well-known person whose views are known, for instance, on abortion, and doesn't like those views, and he'll say, I don't approve your variance, because he kind of has the idea what that person's going to put up on the sign. And that creates the problem. There's also a problem with no time limits on reviewing an application for a variance. A person could put in an application for a variance and it could just sit there if he's an unfavored person and not get acted upon. In Thomas versus Chicago Park District, the Supreme Court recognized that there must be adequate safeguards to guard against this unfettered discretion. FWPBS versus Dallas recognized that the failure to place time limits is a species of unbridled discretion. So that's another reason I believe that the act is unconstitutional. The court has any further questions?
No, but why don't you save the rest of your time? You've got about 3.5 minutes, right?
Okay. Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
May it please the court, Janet Metcalf for the appellee. I think the flaw, actually, in the argument here is that there are a number of sort of assumptions that underlie the appellant's argument, and the assumptions simply aren't borne out on this facial challenge. One assumption is that the basic on-site, off-site distinction that the Act draws is a content-based one, and there's really absolutely nothing, at least on this record, to back that up. The way the Act is written, really, any content conceivably could be on-site and any content can be off-site. It simply depends upon the relationship between what's set on the sign and the location where the sign is displayed.
What compelling government interest is there in making this distinction? You have to have a compelling government interest, do you not?
I'm not sure that we do.
There's a lot of cases that say.
Well, it depends, of course, on whether one sees this as a time, place, and manner regulation or as content-based. If it's content-based, then yes, we have to show a compelling state interest. But I think it's not content-based, and I think that throws it into time, place, and manner, and I guess place being really the determinative factor here.
Well, now we're looking probably at aesthetics more than anything else.
Aesthetics and I think clutter. One of the goals of the Act, which is achieved partially through a numerical limit on the number of permits, is to simply limit the number of signs that are visible from interstate and state highways. And that ties in, obviously, to aesthetics, as you suggest.
But you allow them to do it half-size, and you allow the on-site operator to do it full-size. I find that a rather irrational distinction.
And I don't know that in all cases one could make a great case for that. Again, I think the assumption of allowing on-site signs to be of any size, perhaps it would have been, this is one of those odd situations where I think perhaps the state could make a good argument for more regulation rather than less. Perhaps it would have made more sense to say on-site signs also have some sort of size limitation on them. But obviously that would have restricted speech even more and certainly not made the appellant very happy.
Well, you could certainly cure the problem by having it to the same size for everybody.
Right. And of course, another assumption that underlies the appellant's argument is that most residential sites will not be on-site signs. Again, I think that's a very questionable assumption. Some of the court's questions, I think, have suggested there's no reason apparent on a facial challenge to this law why someone could not create a committee, a weekly meeting, a daily meeting, a monthly meeting, whatever, in their own home for whatever interest group, whatever point of view they wish to espouse, and then have an on-site sign of whatever size they wish.
Now, if the a person who wants to put up a sign says, we think about this a lot at home, is that enough?
I'm not sure. The Act is worded very broadly because the term is activities. One of the terms is an on-premises activity. There has been, so far as I know, essentially no state case law or administrative case law that has really fleshed out how formal or informal an activity must be. I think one could make a case for simply saying that if we sit around and we discuss this regularly over the dinner table, it's something we think about a great deal in this household, that that's an activity. I'm not entirely certain either that the administrative agency in the first instance or a court might agree with that, but it's not an entirely implausible reading of the Act. Activity is, I think, perhaps deliberately chosen to be a rather broadly framed term.
Has the Oregon Department of Transportation issued any regulations governing the variance process?
Only the ones that are attached to the appellant's brief, which set out a couple of examples, as the court's questions have suggested, of what good cause is.
For instance, is there a time limit on the extra, you know, to act?
No.
That's a defect?
I think it's not. If we were in a content-based situation, yes, I would agree that it would be a problem. I think it's not here because of the very express provision in the statute itself that variances cannot consider content. And I think at that point, you're at the same sort of the point of analysis, I think, as the court was in Thomas, where it got past the standards for issuing a permit and got to the level of exceptions to those requirements and said, well, no, there need not be really specific provisions here, including time provisions, because, in fact, those might invite more regulation of speech rather than less, and that having some flexibility can actually be a good thing. Would it maybe be a wise thing for the department to set a time limit? I think probably it would. Is it constitutionally required? I think not.
Can he put on his property a sign, and we won't mention the size, and we won't mention for how long, can he put up a sign under the statute on his property that says peace in the Gulf?
Yes.
And there's no restriction whatsoever about that peace in the Gulf sign?
No.
The only restrictions are it has to be 12 square feet.
Right.
But he can get a variance.
Correct.
Which doesn't concern content for a larger one. And the sign can only be put there for 7 months. Right?
60 days.
Well, temporary.
At a residence, what can you do?
Well, and this again, and all frankly, I find the statute and the rule rather inconsistent on this point. It's certainly clear that you can put up something 12 square feet or less that says anything on your residence.
Forever.
Right.
There's no time restriction on the statute on his property
right.
putting up that message.
Right.
All right.
Once you exceed 12 square feet, the only
question now is, he's come back the second time, he wants 36 square feet rather than 12 square feet.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, to do that, he has to get a variance.
Right.
Part.
And it's frankly a little unclear to me under the rule exactly how long he can leave it up, but it's at least 60 days.
It has nothing to do with on-site or off-site.
Nothing. Nothing whatsoever.
He can put up a sign, peace in the Gulf, period.
Right.
All right.
Right. But he could even evade any of those problems either by having it on-site or having it be 12 square feet or less.
He can put up there anything he wants to put on there.
Right.
All right.
Exactly. Exactly. And the agency is forbidden from considering what he said.
Ms. Metcalf, this statute contains one exception that seems to me to be just the same as the exception in national outdoor advertising and desert outdoor, and that's the governmental exception. It says, you know, exception is for signs of a governmental unit, including but not limited to traffic control and so-and-so. That included but not limited to means they can put a virtually any kind of sign they want, right? They mean a governmental agency.
Apparently, there's...
They could say, you know, join the National Guard today and support the Gulf War, or whatever it is, right?
Right. There's no definition. Governmental unit is defined in the statute. Traffic control device is defined in the statute. But signs of a governmental unit, as the whole phrase, is not defined in the statute. So
well,
it's difficult
not
to know.
That, but there's this including but not limited
right.
to phrase.
Right.
Isn't that a problem?
It might be. I have two answers, I think, to that. The first is simply that I don't think that's ever been here, below, ever, the focus of the appellant's attack. The appellant has essentially set that aside and said, where I find a content-based distinction in this act is either on the on-site-off-site distinction itself or in this exception for signs on one's residential property. So I think that's really not fairly raised by the appellant, wasn't fairly raised by the appellant below.
Well, but the judges have raised it.
Yes, and I will frankly admit that I have thought about that question. I am hard-pressed to distinguish this case from the ones you mentioned, although they, if I remember correctly, each one of those cases has a few more exceptions, but I don't know that that does anything for me other than to say that there's some quantitative difference, which probably doesn't appear to make a qualitative difference, admittedly.
Of course, it seems possible to me that the Oregon Supreme Court could give that entire phrase sort of like a narrowing interpretation, right? You know what I mean? Give
it's,
it a strict interpretation so that it's constitutional?
Yes, and I think it would be fair to say, at least fair to say, that at present, Oregon constitutional law regarding free speech claims is a tougher road to hoe for the state. State appellate court cases rarely reach the First Amendment because we're usually in so much trouble under our state constitution that we never get there. They could give it a narrowing construction. The other possibility is certainly, and I think that this possibility is noted in one of this court's cases, and I've forgotten now which one, but one of the ones you mentioned, there's the possibility that if that were raised, the state might be able either to offer itself a limiting construction and or to offer a compelling state interest, which would justify these signs probably in conjunction, admittedly, with some kind of limiting construction that would allow a compelling state interest to be shown.
But your position today, this issue, this precise issue, hasn't been raised or litigated in this case.
That's, yes. But I'll admit that if you get past that point, those earlier cases are quite troubling, and I cannot offer any persuasive way to distinguish them, frankly.
Getting back to the time upon which, and there's no time limit on granting or denying mm-hmm. a permit, aren't we into a prior restraint problem?
Well, I think not. And again, I think because we're not concerned with content, and again,
well,
Thomas...
we are concerned with content to the extent that we're saying if it's an activity on the premises, okay. Activity not on the premises, you got to go get a permit, and there's no time limit on that.
Well, but we're talking about a time limit, I think, solely on this various procedure, and again,
yes.
That really, I think, becomes time, place, and manner, because you can say anything you want as long as you don't say it too loudly or using up too much physical space to say it. So I think we're back again to time, place, and manner. Manner, I guess, being the pivotal phrase, the pivotal term here. And on that situation, I don't think we have to have a time limit. And with that, frankly, unless the court has any other questions, that's all I have. Thank you.
I guess not. Thank you, Ms. McCaff. Rebuttal?
I found that statutory provision which says that the act does not apply to on-premises signs, and that's ORS 377.7351C. That provides an exception to on-premises.
Or a 12-foot sign.
That's variance, right. Now, as to the 4x3 sign or the 12-foot sign, if the court is inclined...
You say there is a content restriction on a sign that is 12 square feet or less?
No.
Okay.
Not saying that. But I think a question of fact may be raised, and maybe this, if the court is considering affirming on that basis... this question of fact as to whether or not a 4 foot by 3 foot sign can be seen from the state highway by somebody traveling at 55.
Well, there's a provision for variance.
Right. That goes back to the variance, and we say
you're not challenging the at use.
Right. Well, we're not satisfied with a 4 foot by 3 foot sign.
Well, once upon a time you were.
No, we're saying that you can put any content on, but. The content is ineffective, is what we're saying, for a 4 foot by 3 foot sign, because it's so short.
The lawsuit, it must have been visible, because you said that's what you wanted.
No.
You said it isn't visible. What is it?
No, we never said we wanted that. In the prior lawsuit, there was no size stated, and then the law got changed. The statute got changed. Remember, we argued this case in July, I believe, July 11th of 1999, and then in the fall, the statute was changed to provide for a variance. So the court then remanded. And then an amended complaint was filed, which put the 8 foot by 4 foot size in. But prior to that, there was no size stated in the complaint. And that's a little bit of the history. So he's never said he wanted a 4 foot by 3 foot sign.
Is this a subdivision?
No, it's he's got several acres, as I pointed out, and he raises wolves and German shepherds. Which is one reason you never see me on that property.
It's all residents.
No, it's a rural road. The road goes from the coast to Grants Pass, and it goes through hills and it's hilly, and it's a state highway he lives on. The man likes animals for some reason. He feeds wild animals at night. He leaves out food for them, and he used to own a pet store in Santa Ana on First Street, and. He was involved in an automobile accident, and eventually he lost that. But anyway, that's a little bit of his history, and he's a very interesting person. But getting back to the statute, as far as the court raised the government could put anything it wants on a sign, I think that is part of this case because we are alleging violations of Metro Media. We've put the state on notice. We've never had the opportunity to argue it because we've never gone past a motion to dismiss. There's been no discovery. There's been nothing happening in this case. If the court finds out a problem, we certainly believe the case should be remanded and we can get into those factual concerns. If the court has any questions?
You've been to Las Vegas recently?
A few years ago, but there were quite a few signs there.
You seen all the signs on the porch and the highway to Las Vegas?
Sure.
You want Oregon to look like that?
Well, that's not really what this case is about, I think. But frankly, I love that because my son is in the outdoor advertising business. First of all, second of all, I believe in freedom of speech. And every time I see a sign, I think this is a great country. Someone could put up a sign, whereas you go to Cuba or some other country, you can't do that. And I think it's terrific. I wish there were millions of signs everywhere.
All right, Mr. Thurston.
Thank you.
We thank both counsel. In this case, is now submitted for a decision. We stand in adjournment at this time.